Absolute can only be comprehended by thought. But how does thought exist in absolute? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, bringing you the Absolute Philosopher. Absolute can only be comprehended by thought, but how does thought exist in absolute? Well, in a word, only academically, only intellectually. We have no possibility of understanding absolute, of going into absolute, or being absolute, just like we have no possibility of understanding God. We have no possibility of understanding humanity. We have no possibility of understanding anything, because it is all beyond us. Is that a true statement?
No. It's not beyond us.
Don't qualify it. What? Yes, no? See, my listeners are in a quandary. They don't want to stick their foot in their mouth. And Sylvia, she says, no, that cannot be comprehended by thought. It cannot be, it is not something that is unknowable.
Oh, no.
Well, that's what Sylvia said, right?
No, I would not say
that. Did you say that?
Yes,
You said it cannot be unknowable.
I actually said no to it's beyond us.
Well, that's beyond us, beyond knowable, beyond knowing.
Oh.
I mean, beyond us, how would you define beyond us?
That would mean separate from us, beyond us.
Oh, no, no. No, I don't mean,
okay.
I don't mean separate from us.
No,
I don't mean with us either.
I think I say yes, it is knowable.
It is knowable. Mm-hmm. And that really is more the question. Is absolute knowable? Is God knowable? Are you knowable? You know, is the magnificent infinity and creativity of man, you know, just the body alone, is unknowable to us, we think. But we'll know it. And the mind of man is unknowable to us, but we'll know it. Now, how will we know these things? We will know these things when we stop searching for the answer, when we just tune within and let it be revealed to us, because we already know it, we just haven't let it be revealed. Now, the thing that makes learning so incomprehensible and so difficult for most people is that we think we are learning something we don't know. And because we think we're learning something we don't know, we think it's beyond our comprehension. I'll never figure that out. I'll never understand that. Ever heard those statements, you know? It's beyond me, you know. I haven't got a clue, you know. All these little statements of saying that it's beyond our awareness. And when we say that, we are making it beyond our awareness, because we are not accepting the knowledge that is being revealed to us to make it our awareness. Now, a jeweler is going to cut a diamond, as we talked about the other day. And he just takes his chisel and goes chop, 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 doesn't he?
No.
Hardly. He looks at that diamond. He studies the diamond. He holds the diamond. He feels the diamond. The diamond is completely clear. He cannot see anything in there which would indicate a fault, anything that would indicate where to chip it, where to facet it, where to do anything. He cannot tell that. He has to listen intuitively. And when he listens intuitively, then he does it. That's why diamond cutters are so rare. There are very few of them in the world, because it takes a special dedication. Now, if you were to take that same dedication a diamond cutter takes to cutting a diamond and listening to your inner self, if you would take that same dedication the diamond cutter has and be aware of who you are, wow! You would be fantastic. You would be amazing. The world would climb up every ladder to climb into your tower and understand what you know. But you can't explain it to anybody, because this is an intuitive awareness, an intuitive understanding, which does not have any words. Just as the Buddha could not define bliss to anybody, or, you know, his nirvana, And even today, they don't know. Now, we received a letter from one of our students who is on the East Coast, and she wrote that she wanted to know what the beast is all about in Revelations. And I told her, wow, you know, the beast is just our desire not to listen to the God within us. It's not the desire not to be paying attention to what's going on inside of us. And why was she interested in the beast? Here she was, a woman facing many problems, and she was reading Revelations. She was reading that rather obtuse material that philosophers, theologians, and everybody else have just given up with. Oh, there's a lot of people who have opinions about it, but they've given up on it because it is not the teachings of Jesus. If you're going to go by the Christian Bible, you go by the four Gospels, and even that gets a little messy. And if you're a Jew, you go by the Old Testament. The Jews don't have the Revelations in their book. They stop, you know, and we go on. At least those who call themselves Christians go on. But think about it. How can we know absolute? How can we comprehend absolute? How can we even be aware of it? Well, let's say, what does absolute mean? What are we trying to describe when we say the word absolute? Well, we're saying God. We're saying the first cause. We're saying the creator of the universe. We're saying the creator of all beingness. Things like that, you know. Okay, now, can you begin to understand the Creator? Not very well. How can you ever understand the Creator? Any answer? By being the Creator. Mm-hmm. By being the Creator. Now, are you the Creator?
Yes.
Then you should certainly understand the Creator, shouldn't you? All right. Now, if you would take the time to understand yourself as the Creator, then you would be understanding absolute. You would be understanding the beast. You'd be understanding all these things that are written at any time, at any place. And it's really quite fascinating how they are. But are we interested in those things? Do we pay attention to those things? No, we don't. We really don't. And like I wrote to our friend here, and I said, interesting question from Revelation, the beast. The beast is the choice humanity makes from time to time to cease to recognize the teachings of the Master Jesus Christ. He clearly points the way to our divinity within, but we choose to look outside. The beast is our choice to be aware of a power outside of God in our world, an Antichrist, a devil or Satan, which would claim our attention if we were so sorry as to give it to something other than God indwelling. It is not evil. It is just a pure waste of time to even think about it. Since you are in your special monastery, I would recommend that you give the power to the Christ indwelling you, to the words of Jesus, to the four Gospels, to the truth that we go to the Father who dwells within us. And that's the big point. And then she brought up about the third eye. And I said, your third eye is your mark of God on your forehead, on the forehead of every living creature, and it cannot be removed or replaced. The sign of the beast is where men struggle in their belief in God indwelling. You may notice that I lowercase the noun God because the dictionary points out that the universal God is lowercase in spelling, while the deity of various religions have their own God, such as Hindus and Christians and many others. Now, can you see? We get off track when we go trying to research areas that theologians have been mystified by. Now, why did the early councils of the Catholic Church put in Revelations in the Bible? Why did they put these various books in the Bible? And that's a good question. Perhaps some of them were more in tune than we are. Some of them were more in depth in an understanding in those areas than we are today. Or they just thought it was a hellish thing to do, to put it in there to scare the liver out of people, you know? And that's what the early church did. Because if they taught what Jesus taught, that you could go to the Father within, and the absolute within, how about that? And the absolute within will reveal openly all things to you. The church would not be needed. The church would not be needed. The church is only good to show the people the way, but the people have to make the way within themselves. But the church over the years has made itself indispensable to humanity by saying that you cannot be absolved of sin or problems unless you go to the church or to your minister or to your pastor or priest or whoever. And this is manipulation and control. And it is continuing your services where they're no longer needed. Now, think of this. All of you are young enough and old enough to remember the iceman who used to deliver blocks of ice to our houses so that we could keep our food cold. And when the iceman had to lose his job because of the refrigerator, everyone said, now what will happen to the iceman? Well, they went into air conditioning. They went into many other areas, and some continued selling ice because people continued to want ice. And it was many years later that the refrigerators learned how to make ice cubes, you know, or they had ice making machines. So for many years after the refrigerator came into being, the icemen still had plenty of work, not as much as before, but plenty of work. And you see, the old has to go. The old ways of serving things have to go. And when the old goes, what's going to come in its place? Do you know, I was in Europe, and I was visiting with one of my sponsors there, and she brought home the milk from the grocery store, and she left it sitting on the counter all day. And I said to her, what is this all about, you know? You're letting the milk set out like that and it spoil? She says, oh, no, no. It will not spoil until you open it. Then you put it in the refrigerator. Up until the time you open it, you don't have to put it in the refrigerator. And I thought, wow, I don't think we have that in America. But many things were done like that. And that's a new invention, too. So if you buy milk in the quantity that you're going to use at each meal, you don't have to refrigerate it at all. Just open it and use it, and then throw the box away. But this is what, you see, it's a change in attitude, the change in awareness. And one day, we will not even need milk. The attitude is, and you know about it, that we really don't need to eat. We really don't need to sleep. We really don't need to breathe. We really don't need to drink water. But we're doing it because we think we need it. And we have not trained ourselves out of that thinking habit. There are some beings on the face of the earth who do it. They are recorded, but not many. Because for you or I to give up eating, you and me, we would take it very difficult. We'd say, that smells so good. Oh, you know, I've dieted enough without it. But we could do it. We could do it. And amazing things happen. As the scientists tell us that the mice who lived on a starvation diet lived 3 to 7 times their normal life's length. And that's remarkable. Not that we're mice, but it's an interesting idea. So when we are dealing with absolute, we're dealing only with an academic idea. For when an intuitive idea comes to us, when we are aware of it on an intuitive nature, then we do not have the words to tell about it. We've said this before. We do not have the vocabulary to describe. That's why I said, what is absolute? We say it's the allness, the isness. We say it's God. We say it's the creative cause. We say it's all these things. Well, what is that? They're equally hard to describe as absolute is. And since we do spend a third of our talks each day on absolute topics, we'll be touching the same base quite often. But perhaps as we investigate this and look into it and research it in our minds, we may come up with something worthwhile. You never can tell. I know when I attended the University of Chicago, I was in on a philosophical discussion group in the home of several of the professors. There were about 3 of us students who were invited to their evening meetings once a week. And we'd have dinner at their house, and we'd meet them. And we would discuss these rather peculiar topics, topics that had no possibility of being understood. But the things that came up out of that meeting were enough to sparkle your mind and make you think and make you say, wow, that's a new way of looking at it. Maybe, you know? And it was just really amazing and fascinating. And I delighted in that experience. We have done that here at times, but the difficulty of doing it here is that the people who we do it with, they all think they're masters and they know it all. Mm-hmm. And as they listen, they reject what they're hearing instead of saying, hey, that's a springboard for a new idea. That's a way of stepping off into a new thought system, you know. That's wonderful. Hey, I don't believe everything you're saying, but it sure inspires me to go on to some new ideas. And that's what we should do. I have a letter from one of our students. Wonderful person, writes marvelous theses and essays and everything. And he has one little hang-up, the poor child. One little hang-up. And that is, he thinks that his excretion doesn't stink, you know? He thinks that he is superior to everybody, and he thinks that he is a supermaster. Well, what is it that a supermaster would do? Say nothing. A supermaster never blows his own horn. He never tells people how great he is. He never goes around expressing that other people one day may understand him, you know. He just is who he is, or she is who she is. And you may look at them sometimes and think that they're stupid. But if you really look, you'll find they're very wise. Because they ask dumb questions. And their dumb questions would enamor them into the hearts of thinking people. Because the dumb questions are the real questions that need to be asked. These are great experiences that we all have, and we have a great deal to learn by this. But every evening as we consider these thoughts, I think perhaps tomorrow night we're going to consider this topic: how does the law of cause and effect fit with absolute? And we're going to put this on conference, and all of us are going to enter into the conversation and come up with some significant ideas that are going to pop right out of our own mind, and we'll be surprised at what we come up with. Perhaps Adler and Hutchins and the others at the University of Chicago that I was privileged to sit with may be in our midst now and may be inspiring us to be very aware of the knowledge we have within us that we haven't expressed to the moment. So let's think about that for tomorrow night. Good idea?
Yes.
Okay. Have a lovely evening.
Thank you.
I love you. I love you. I love you.